There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 873, February 22nd, 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say clock is ticking, cars are launching, and times are exciting. And now we are going back to Cali for Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Red Bull blames wind tunnel. Mercedes already sandbagging. We've got 20 years of Kimi. And we have more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And don't forget, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. I do want to thank Don Hoag for his contribution. I appreciate it, Don. Nass, welcome to the studio. How you been?
I'm doing very good, sir. Like the rest of the racing fans around the globe, I am eagerly waiting for the start of at least the test sessions. And then we go into racing, but it's coming up soon. We have only, you know, good thing is February is only 28 days, so we have about a week left, and then we're into March madness. How are things for you on the left coast, senor?
The left coast is exciting. Everybody at F1 Weekly is working very hard to get through the COVID-19 issues, and we are already looking forward into the fall and hoping that Laguna Seca is going to happen, Pebble Beach is going to happen. This is when F1 Weekly goes out there and presses the flesh.
Yes, sir, that is very true. And talking of, and there is Laguna Seca coming up later in the conversation. And before you call and after your recording is over, I'm going to go back to watching some action from Laguna Seca, but I'm going to tell later what it is. But anyway, talking of clocks, let's start with Swiss timing. C41 for 21. That is the designation for the new Alfa Romeo Sauber. The C in the name is for Christine, wife of Peter Sauber. Did you see the launch, sir?
It's exciting and so fun.
Yes, and you know, it was an impressive shindig in that wonderful destination city of Warsaw. The new car was launched today, Monday. The paint scheme is very beautiful. I really like this. Love the Alfa Romeo logo on the side. And of course, the team will feature the same driver lineup for the third year. Kimi Raikkonen and Antonio Giovinazzi, also known as Father Guido Sarducci of Motorsports. You know, this year, because of all the COVID and budget issues, teams will be using the same chassis as last year. So not many changes, and rule changes have been pushed back one more year. So which all bodes very well for, you know, car number 44. Last year, out of 10 teams, Alfa Romeo Sauber finished 8th in the Constructors' Championship. And team principal Frederick Vasseur has some realistic goals, saying, and I quote, "We have to do a better job tomorrow than we are doing today." End of quote. And Robert Kubica will be their reserve driver, and he was one of the main reasons that the launch of the new car took place in Warsaw, the other being even more important, their sponsor, this petrochemical Polish company called Orlen. So more power to them. And of course, Kubica was also introduced, so he was very proud of being a Pole and this thing happening in Poland. So good for them. Sometime change is good. Kimi most likely will finish his F1 career at the end of the season, same place where he started way back in 2001. Sir, do you think that this is the end of the road for Kimi Mathias Raikkonen?
Not necessarily. I think Kimi still has a couple of years left in him. If it's okay with Sauber, he could stick around for a couple more years.
He may stick around, but I will be very, very surprised if Alfa Romeo branding or whatever this thing is called now continues after this season, especially after this formation of this new Stellantis company where they have, God knows, 10, 12 car brands under their umbrella. But apparently people at the top are big motorsports fans, but we will see how much money they want to burn when most of them brands are not making money. Apparently, you know, Peugeot Citroën Group, they bought the European operation of General Motors, which included Opel and Vauxhall. And apparently, I read about that, the Opel brand, which was a long-time money-losing proposition for GM, is now making money. So good for them. And actually, they are making some of the Buick models that are being sold in the U.S. currently under a pre-existing agreement. So there you have it. Anything else you want to say about car launches or paint schemes or agendas for this season before the season starts?
Well, the paint schemes, you know, we have a couple that we were dying to see. I thought the Alfa Romeo was pretty blasé. It is last year's car this year with a few changes here and there. The front wing is narrow, the nose is narrower, but let's get on with it. Forget the car launches. I want to see how much sandbagging is Mercedes, who's already begun sandbagging, admitting to problems with the engine and stuff, which they do every year. It's laughable, but all we know is, car 44, where are you?
Well, there was an interesting news item over the weekend about from Toto Wolff about driver lineup that they will consider, start thinking about it halfway through the 2021 season. And basically, two drivers are in the running, George Russell and Esteban Ocon. Both of them are under contract. And, you know, interestingly, Esteban's contract is coming to an end at Alpine. And George Russell is in his final year of contract with Williams. And after his performance in Sakhir, it should be a no-brainer that he will be at Mercedes next year. What remains to be seen, if we will have two new drivers at Mercedes or just one. If it's going to be one, I think we all know who is leaving the Brackley building.
You don't mean Bottas, do you?
Oh, good guess, Mr. Rogers. Were you thinking about this during the brief silence we had?
No, I was putting some mustard on my pate.
Oh, pretty impressive. Yeah, so yeah, that's probably what it will be. But I think Bottas, if Lewis retires, then Bottas' chances of becoming world champions, they go very, very high. Keeping in mind, this is supposing that Mercedes will continue their domination after the new rules are in play. But we will see, we will see. Okay, sir, moving forward, glitz and glamour, hoping for a comeback. The Monaco government, which is like what? The dining room of the ruling family, Grimaldi family. They are working to prepare the circuit just after this past weekend. So the construction of the street circuit is beginning now. And one of the officials said the installation is beginning 7 weeks before the first event, which is in advance of about 15 days, because before every 2 years before the Monaco Grand Prix, they have the Monaco Historic Grand Prix, which is very high on my bucket list, and this will take place this year on April 23rd. And I would love to attend someday, but this year may not be the best time. Have you been to Monaco, sir, for the race or just as a trip?
Yes, I've been to Monaco, but I have not been to the Grand Prix.
Have you driven? Have you gone through the tunnel by the swimming pool? Have you had a cappuccino at La Rascas?
Does a bear go in the woods?
Ah, well, I don't know about the French bears. You know, they may be on their own agenda.
Correct. They usually go at the bistro.
Yeah, they're sophisticated, right? Okay, I love the story of, what was it, David Hobbs and Jim Clark going to Tip Top Bar early in their career, and they didn't have the money and they bailed out of the window. Isn't that beautiful?
That's the old days, Nasser.
Yes, sir, before they were rich and famous. Okay, sir, now we come to Honda. They are hoping to say sayonara with success. Honda's F1 technical director, Senior, or should I say Toyoharu Tanabe-san, said, and I quote, "We have made modifications to the ICE, turbine, and ERS. This is our third year with Scuderia AlphaTauri, and in order to improve as a whole, we have also improved the installation and packaging of the entire PU power unit," and of course AlphaTauri and the mothership Red Bull. He continued to say, "We won't know for sure how good a job we have done until we hit the track, but so far preparation has gone smoothly," end of quote. Now the one-time GP2 engine has sure come a long way, and hopefully with their driver Mighty Max, they can bring about a regime change in 2021, which I seriously doubt, but let's hope for it. All I know is this, you know, at the end of 2004, the Red Baron was flying high. Nobody could touch him. Nobody could even get close to him. But then in 2005, a Spanish Armada brought him down. And that can happen to Lewis Hamilton also. What say you?
Well, I mean, we were hoping that would happen. I mean, what goes up must come down, relatively speaking. And we're hoping for the excitement that 2005 brought us. Everybody on the edge of their seat going bravissimo, bravissimo, bravissimo. So you never know when excitement comes. But when it comes in buckets.
Yeah. And talking of bravissimo, you know, I'm taking this time to watch a lot of old races, and normally what I do is, you know, on YouTube it just automatically rolls into the next video, so I'll put on when I'm working, like 2010 season or the decade of 80s, and it just one thing rolls into another. And the other day, a couple of days ago, I watched the Monaco Grand Prix where Jarno Trulli was the winner, and that was interesting. Okay, sir, apart from you, there is one more gentleman who is very happy for Lewis Hamilton's success, which came as a surprise, and that is Nico Rosberg. You know, once upon a time, they were two young kids, best of buddies, and teammates in karting and driving to races together with their papitos. Interestingly, Nico won the first ever GP2 championship, I believe it was 2005, and the following year, Lewis took the title. Nico also made it to Formula One before Lewis, who could have guessed. And then Mercedes replaced seven-time world champion Michael Schumacher with one-hit wonder Lewis Hamilton. And here we are, Mr. Rogers, today. LCH is looking to get ahead of the eight ball at the end of the season, while Nico Rosberg went on the Steve Miller program after winning the championship, becoming a one-hit wonder himself, take the money and run. Now he's singing praises of LCH to make his claim, and very rightly so, that his championship is worth something in credibility because he beat Master Lewis to the title. Which, if you think about it, just look how Heikki Kovalainen went against Lewis, also Valtteri Bottas. Bottas has beaten him fair and square in a few races, but Nico Rosberg had really become a every race pest for Lewis Hamilton. Your thoughts or two paces on this situation, sir?
Absolutely. I mean, when Lewis Hamilton was teamed up with Nico Rosberg, we got a couple of great seasons. And Nico's last season was exciting, and he played everything. Unlike Valtteri Bottas, who is Mr. Nice Guy, Nico played full-blown psychological warfare, and it worked. And I don't understand why Valtteri doesn't study the past so he could improve his future. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but Nico, you know, was up there in performance also, taking pole after pole, wins after wins. And I know he talks about psychological advances. He got into Lewis's head. Frankly, I don't buy that because, you know, Lewis had quite a few technical issues early in the season. And had it not been for that Kablamo in Kuala Lumpur, Nico Rosberg would be on the Rubinho and Massa program. But what has happened, and we have to move on. And of course, we do respect all drivers who win races and championships and do their very best. And speaking of very best, we come to Pietro Fittipaldi. He has been announced as reserve driver for Haas. You know, when I met him and his brother Enzo at Sebring recently, one of their family friends was also there, and he was telling me that at one of the races, one of the two races that Pietro did, he was faster than Kevin Magnussen, which I've not checked, but, you know, it could be true. But Pietro did bring the car to the finish line in both races, so I'm happy for him. And hopefully I will meet him and his brother Enzo, younger brother Enzo, at Barber Motorsports Park in April, and hopefully we can sit down and do some more mystery guest interviews. So that should be good, sir.
Come to think of it, I'm a little thirsty, Nasser, so why don't we have our buddy from Scotland, Mr. Gary Sloan.
Hello, listeners. My name is Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So as Red Bull announces the formation of Red Bull Powertrains Limited amid great publicity, his question is all well in the Red Bull camp? Well, on the engine front, Helmut Marko summed up best when he told reporters in a video call, "The establishment of Red Bull Powertrains Limited is a bold move by Red Bull, but it is one we have made after careful and detailed consideration." Christian Horner added, "Red Bull were taking a long-term view because the investment in facilities was significant." So Red Bull has committed substantial funds to the project, and these would have been sanctioned by the ultimate owners of the team, the Red Bull Drinks Company. This is where things get a bit tricky, with the fallout between Red Bull owners Dietrich Mateschitz and the Jodevic family over the sacking of Alec Albon. Mateschitz's original partner was the late Chalo Jodevic, who rose from poverty to become Thailand's third wealthiest person with an estimated 5 billion fortune before he died at the age of 88 in 2012. Then the estate was passed down to his 11 surviving family members, the most prominent being his son Sharlim and grandson Vorayuth. Sharlim and his wife Balerik were big supporters of Albon, and it is believed Sharlim went ballistic over the dismissal of Albon. Vorayuth was even more distraught, as he'd acted as a mentor to Albon and had moved to the UK to become more involved, becoming a more permanent fixture in the garage over race weekends. The decision to axe Albon was taken with Mateschitz, as he is the final say in team matters, but it's believed the final straw was data collected by Adrian Newey that highlighted Albon's lack of pace. Additionally, behind the scenes was Sergio Perez manager Julian Jacobi, who realised Perez's sponsorship money held little bargaining power with Red Bull. So instead, he allegedly orchestrated a subtle media campaign to undermine Albon and big up Perez. The problem for Mateschitz is the potential backlash in the running of his Red Bull drinks empire, as his shareholding is 49%, the Jodevic family 49%, and critically, Charlene holds 2%. This allows him the casting vote. So it remains to be seen if this deal will derail the continued success of the company, or will money take precedence? Well, Red Bull can afford the team and the new engine division, as its finances pre-COVID-19 were in good shape, with 7.9 billion cans sold in 2019. That's almost one for each person on the planet. This gave the company revenues of $6 billion, and Red Bull reinvested a staggering $2 billion into marketing, which includes the Formula One team. With a can of Red Bull costing 9 cents and a wholesale price in Western countries at $1.87, you can do the math and understand why the latest annual dividends paid out are $211 million to the Jodevic family, with Maastricht pocketing a cool $343 million. So time will tell on any potential repercussions, but no doubt it won't keep Maastricht awake at night. After all, this is a man who is on record as saying, "I don't believe in 50 friends, I believe in a smaller number." On the other side of the garage, we have Max Verstappen. Verstappen has gone public with his relationship with Kelly Piquet, and the tabloid press have had a field day with Piquet, the daughter of three-time Formula One world champion Nelson Piquet, and mother to a child with ex-partner Daniel Kvyat. Piquet is portrayed as a model, but she also manages the social media and the blog writing department of Formula E's official website. The Red Bull camp is rumoured to be worried about Verstappen's focus and his ever-increasing lavish lifestyle. Verstappen has purchased a private Falcon jet from no other than Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic. This on the back of last year's purchase of a $1.75 million Ferrari limited edition Monza SP2 Roadster. Well, it's hard to criticise a 23-year-old who now earns anything from $12.5 million to Business Book GP's latest updated forecast of $30 million, for not wanting to splash the cash. Probably more of a concern to Marco and Horner is the confirmation that Verstappen has a performance clause in his contract that allows for the possibility to depart the team at the end of 2021. Marco confirmed this to F1 Insider. He said, "I don't want to go into details, but it is more or less says that Max can compete for race wins and the world championship on his own merits. If he can do that, his contract is extended. If not, he would be free." According to F1 Insider's report, the crucial element is if the gap to the fastest car continues to be over 0.3 seconds, Max could jump ship. So interesting times ahead for Red Bull, both on and off the track. On a footnote, Lawrence, coming up smelling of roses Stroll, was no doubt pleased with the signing of Perez to Red Bull, as he dodged a bullet that was the multi-million dollar compensation claim due to Perez over his dismissal if Perez was unable to secure a drive. Well, that's it for another week. More details in thepitlane.com. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, thank you. That was another outstanding dish of haggis. Back to you, Nasser.
Okay, sir. Later in the show, we're going to do a little bit of March memories. But let's now continue with motorsports and Formula Uno. Danny Rick, number 3 at McLaren for 3 years. Now, this is a driver movement that I'm I'm more interested in this movement than I am at a 2-time world champion going to Alpine. What he's going to achieve there, I really don't know. But I wish everybody all the best. You know, Daniel Ricciardo is a big fan of Dale Earnhardt Sr. and that's how he got the number 3. And recently he paid a nice tribute to the NASCAR legend, saying that when he had his crash and he found out that Dale had passed away, he called his friend and they both cried on the phone, and they were very young in those days. And then he went on to explain that he attended his first NASCAR event back in 2007 as a guest of Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Chase Elliott at Texas Motor Speedway. So that's very interesting. More motorsports news. It's a little pinky. Both Haas and Williams are trying to get the pinky sponsorship. Austrian company BWT is looking to move from Racing Point, now that it's turning into Aston Martin and British Racing Green. I don't know about you, Mr. Rogers, but I do miss Claire Williams singing praises of racing talents from the likes of Roy Nissany to Lola Falana. Do you miss her?
I do miss her. She was so exciting and wonderful.
Absolutely, sir. Okay, some good news here. Hopefully in our lifetime, Kyalami coming back. Kyalami, of course, is a wonderful track with a lot of tragic history there. And if I'm not mistaken, there is a lot of renovation has gone on there, and the track is now owned by Porsche. And the gentleman who is trying to get the South African Grand Prix back, he said it may not happen next year, but hopefully in 2023 they'll come back. This gentleman is the nephew of 1979 world champion Jody Scheckter. So that is pretty interesting. Okay, sir, you were talking about Motorsports Mondial. We do have a little bit of Motorsports Mondial. Asian Formula 3, the final round took place past weekend at Yas Marina. Chinese driver Guan Yu Zhu took the title from French driver Pierre-Louis Chauvet. Chauvet had I think it was 23 or more points in the lead going into the final, but was eliminated early in one of the races, and Guan Yu won that race, and that gave him 25 points. And there was still another race to go. But that was chop-chop for Chauvet and his championship hopes. Now, all these races, they were also doing UAE Formula 4. They are available on YouTube if anybody is interested. And I've been watching this, you know, all these races. I need something, you know, something is better than nothing. I'm enjoying all this kind of stuff, and this is where we will bring in a little while what I was talking at the top of the show about Laguna Seca. So, sir, not much racing going on, so we need some filler. So we have a little historical thing here, March memories. May I proceed, sir?
Pedro says, absolutely.
No, he says S-I in a text message. And that is C, not Sports Illustrated. But anyhow, moving on. Back in 1977, on March 18, Brazilian Brabham driver Carlos Pache was killed in a private plane crash. His only one and only Grand Prix win came on home track, Interlagos, in 1975. And as we all know, the track is named after him. And you know, at one time he was teammate to Carlos Reutemann at Brabham, and Carlos Pache's nickname was Moco, and Reutemann's nickname was Lole. So we had a Moco and Lole show going on with the big E, Mr. Ecclestone, who owned the team. Next, sir, March 6, 1971. Mario Andretti wins his first championship Grand Prix in his first drive for Ferrari at Kyalami in South Africa, a feat that was also achieved by several other drivers, including R. Nige in Brazil, and Fernando Alonso in Bahrain, and Kimi in Australia. So good going here. Now, March 12, 2006, season opener in Bahrain saw Grand Prix debut for 20-year-old Nico Rosberg. He set the fastest lap of the race and finished 12th. Another legend who made his debut in this race was the man from La Mantica, if not La Mancha, your favorite fellow Northern California native, Mr. Scott Speed. Now, this is what's very interesting. On the same day, another historical event took place that weekend, and that was the A1GP race at Laguna Seca. And amazingly, Mr. Rogers and Moore were at the track at the same time, but back then we were strangers in paradise. And Mr. Rogers, this is the race I will be watching after the conclusion of the podcast. It's like a two-hour show on YouTube with John Watson as one of the commentators. It was Destiny and Mr. Rogers' picture at Reims that brought us together in the Palatial Studios. And what a day it was. I don't know what you remember most about that day, but we had Jos Verstappen representing Team Netherlands. And what I remember most is up until Daytona 24 Hours of this year, the Laguna Seca A1GP race was the only event, motorsports event, I have been to where the drivers and team personnel outnumbered the spectators. And that was mainly due to the very cold weather, winter we were having in California back in the day. And when you watch this race, the sprint race there, I was watching, rain, it looks like more like Spa than Laguna Seca. So, Mr. Rogers, what do you remember from that weekend, sir?
That was a very interesting weekend. I was with Steve Faub, my producer David Tapia, and Desiree was there as well. And it was exciting. We interviewed the United States team. We've talked to a lot of people, but you're right. It was cold. It was freezing. It was the beginning of F1 Weekly. We were pumped up. It was like we had six pots of coffee. It was great. We had a great time. Like you said, you had not entered my life yet. But, and the shot of Jos Verstappen freaking out and yelling at his engineers and stuff was exciting. It was classic. But it was sort of fun. A lot of people, you know, you had a lot of access to the cars and the teams. You really didn't need media credentials because I think media was all that was there. Television was there, I think Channel 4 or 5, I can't remember which one was there. But it was all very interesting. I enjoyed it. Those were the early years of F1 Weekly when we were all wet behind the ears.
Yeah, you know, I was there all weekend, so we must have passed each other several times. And you know, you're talking about Team USA, that team, the franchise holder was a guy by the name of, if I remember the name correctly, Rick Weidinger. And he was one of those young multi-billionaires from the MCI WorldCom tech bubble that was going on. So that was very interesting. And I had a brief chat with him and also with the Arab Prince, who had launched the series. And if you, I don't know if you remember this, there was a Team Pakistan also. And the kid who was driving, he was born and raised in England of Homi heritage. and I spent a lot of time with him and his daddy. What I can say about him, his attitude was the shining example that made him the finest you can be, or as Nelson Piquet Jr. of Pakistan. I mean, it was unbelievable. But I had great memories, and it had even snowed that weekend at Laguna Seca. I remember that. So it's a great facility, and the corkscrew is beautiful. And if somebody happens to be in Northern California and they've never been to this track, I would highly recommend it. It's a beautiful track. It's worth a visit. And the Monterey Historics, I know the name has changed. That's a great, great event. And, I saw Fangio driver Mercedes there. And that's where I met Herman Long, who used to drive Grand Prix cars for Mercedes Auto Union in the 30s. So Laguna Seca is very, very dear to me.
Laguna Seca does attract an elite crowd. It's very exciting. The entire weekend is very exciting. And you could even rent a classic car if you don't own a classic car. You could just rent a classic car and be cool. That way, when you run into Alan Decadney downtown, you just wave at him. But you have to give Alan Decadney a queen-like wave, if you know what I mean. Absolutely, Mark Webber was not only there, but I was wearing my Fernando glasses and my Fernando Kimoa hat. And I was in the paddock, and Mark Webber saw me, I saw him. We exchanged glances. It was very exciting.
Wow. Okay, Mr. Sinatra. Exchanging glances here with Mark Webber. You know, one of the greatest motorcycle races, MotoGP races, what I call the Dijon Prenois of MotoGP, took place there many years ago. And I am so, so pleased to say I was there when Rossi and Casey Stoner on a Ducati had a real ding-dong. And man, what a race that was. So yes, Laguna Seca numero uno in California.
Bravo, bravo, and bravo. And of course, now we're getting close to March. It's the end of February. I believe Mercedes is going to come out more sandbagging to boot. But I also expect other teams to sandbag, including Renault Alpine.
How much can they sandbag? What will happen at Renault Alpine is Fernando Alonso is going to put that car where it has no business being. Like maybe get on the podium in a few races, and just he will do what he does with a car, you know, which is not many people can do. But what I'm really looking forward to see is, you know, when Honda was with McLaren, they were basically thrown under a Greyhound bus and a Mack truck, only to be discovered that they did not have a very good car. But they've come a long way, and they are. I've been on the podium now, so I'm hoping with a Mercedes engine, unless they have hired some people from McLaren, from Williams, I would expect them to do very well. And I am expecting Danny Rick to be on several podiums this year. And he is somebody who, his racecraft is very good. Remember when he won his first race in Canada with Red Bull? So I will not be surprised if Ricciardo gives McLaren a win this year. Will not surprise me at all. Nando getting on the podium will not surprise me. Him winning a race will surprise me. Because, you know, back in the days, if it was raining, it was him or Lewis. But now it is Max and Lewis and then Nando. So it's not going to be easy with Lewis and Max racing in the rain. But I agree with you that it's going to be car 44 one more time for the good time.
And on that note, Nass, why don't we hear from mystery guest number 57?
Okay, folks, I'm here with Esteban Ocon. First of all, welcome back to the world of Formula One. On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you, or do we need a bigger scale?
Bigger scale, I think. Thank you for the welcome back. But I've never really left this F1 world. I was always here. As soon as there was an engine firing up, I was here waiting and ready to jump. So.
Okay. You know,
I just found out a few minutes ago, we have a mutual friend, Mr. Olivier Meunou, says hello to you.
Oh, great, great. Well, I say hello back then.
Okay, I will let him know. In your brief Formula One career so far, you were already king of consistency. Moving forward, what is the game plan? Maximum attack on Daniel Ricciardo or keep calm and carry on to score many points?
Well, it will be to score as many points as possible. You know, that's the important on a championship. There are some times where you need to take a bit of risk, but you need to think about what you are going to win and what you are going to lose from that. So there's always a thought going behind the risk taking.
Sounds like you're learning from Sebastian and Leclerc.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
No, why? I always thought myself about this. No. You know, I've been driving since a lot of time, so you know, I take the experience in, obviously.
We all know Formula One is serious doggy dog world. In terms of driving style, are there many similarities between you and Danny Rick? And do you expect any help from him in terms of setup and data sharing?
I don't know his driving style yet, but for sure, I think we will work together with all the engineers that are sharing and all those things will be of course a normal thing, and I hope we can make the team move forward from there.
I'm sure you know the very first Grand Prix in this world was won by Renault. Are you happy, extra happy to be with the French team?
Yes, more than happy. It's the team where I grew up with in Enstone since 2010. I was part of the program until 2014, so I really grew up in the factory there. And it felt like a story which should not have ended, so I'm pretty happy to continue it now.
Okay. You and Max were in the news after last year's Brazilian Grand Prix. Will there be exchange of Christmas cards in December so we, the race fans, know that everything is cool between the two of you?
No, we had a cool race, actually, with the road cars, you know, on the Pirelli hot laps yesterday. We had two laps of racing. We had good fun. We had a good laugh then when we came out of the car. So no problem between us.
Great. Okay, success has been part and parcel of your racing life, from karting to F3 and GP3. Was there a particular season or series where you felt you improved the most as a driver?
I think every year has been useful for me to develop myself. Of course, some years have been a bit more difficult than others, but all in all, I think the more categories you do and the more things you see, the more useful it is before coming to F1, because it's more experience. So I don't think one year is less useful than another. I think they all have been useful.
And in from your karting days, what really stands out? What events, what championships?
So I've been 3 times French champion. I finished second in the World Series karting, which is like the world championship. And yeah, those are my main wins.
And when you moved from karting to single-seater racing, I believe Formula Renault was the first.
Yes.
How difficult or how challenging was the adjustment, or it came naturally to you?
Yeah, no, it took some time. It took a year, really, to get very, very comfortable. Of course, I was against a very quick teammate, who was Daniel Kvyat, who had 3 years of racing in single-seater. As soon as I was in my second year, I was fighting for the title. So, yeah, from there on, it was good.
Before you got picked up by Gravity initially, who was guiding your or managing your career?
Before?
Yeah.
Before that was my parents. Then it's always been Eric Boullier and Gwen. Gwen, who still works for Mercedes now, still manage the junior program. So, yeah, we've come a long way since that time.
Absolutely. And I hope you go a long way too, because I'm a big Esteban Ocon fan. Okay, among all the drivers you have raced against, from karting to Formula One, who stand out as real tough competitors?
I think Max and Charles, really. They were the ones where we raced the whole time together. Of course, quick competitors, but tough ones also on track. And yeah, I think we've pushed ourselves forward all our career, basically, and that helps bringing our level up when we arrive into Formula One. So yeah, it's been quite a few years with them.
Okay, my understanding is you're going to drive for Renault but remain under Mercedes management. How did this deal come about? Did Toto call you, or did you send him a case of French wine? About what? Sorry.
How you got involved with the Mercedes Driver Development Program?
No, it's a bit more complicated than that. In 2014, I won the Formula 3 Championship, and the program got lost a bit, and they ran out of money, so I had no program. So 2015, so I called Toto and said, look. Because I met him in that year, and I said, look, if I don't have any possibilities for next year at the moment, can you find me something? And he said, if Lotus can't do anything for you, I take you under the Mercedes star. And I waited a couple months, and that's what he did. So yeah, definitely thankful for Toto and everything he's been helping on since 2015.
No, you did a season in DTM also. Was that like a season that you said, oh man, I have to do this?
No.
Or did you do it very gladly?
No, I chose back in the days to do that. I wanted to be a professional driver straight away. Coming from, you know, my background, there was no secure thing on if I was going to go to F1 or not, and I wanted to be professional straight away, and in the end it was a fantastic step up, because you know, it's a good preparation for Formula 1. Back in the days there was tire blankets, full on engineers, the cars, they were very complicated, and yeah, I went from there to Formula 1 and felt more or less like I was doing the same, so it's been good to do that.
And your testing starts to Renault very soon. Have they given you any sort of like, okay, these are the goals and objectives, or have you set yourself, I want 3 podiums, or I want to finish in that, anything like that?
I think you can probably ask Cyril on what are the objectives are, but in my opinion, what we want to achieve is improving from where they are this year. Do better than what they have done. That's the target. Of course, I want to score podium or podiums. That would be fantastic. But we'll see. Let's start first and see you later.
Can you name like top 2 or 3 favorite tracks of yours?
Yes.
I'm guessing Spa is there.
No, Spa is not.
Really?
No. Yeah, I'm a bit different than any other drivers on there. Suzuka, Budapest, Monaco.
Very interesting. Do you enjoy racing in the wet?
Yes, yeah, very much. I mean, enjoy, yes and no, but you know, when I'm on it, I feel at ease, really. It's condition I like.
Okay, last question is the most important for mankind. Unfortunately, grid girls are gone from F1, but in your time, which Grand Prix track had the best looking, what I call chicas de pista?
De pista.
That was all before your time.
That was before my time, yeah. So I don't know, I can't really tell you. No.
Well, you've seen them all in Formula 3.
Yeah, in Formula 3 we've seen. I mean, we still have some kind of grid girl sometimes. I mean, it's good that we also have kids, you know, that can have the chance to meet us and all that. I think we probably could have both, all in all.
Now, talking of meeting drivers, do you enjoy fans coming up to talking to you?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't mind. You know, it's awesome to see the support that a lot of fans give to me, especially in a year which is difficult like that.
Okay.
So yeah, it's great to see.
And if you don't mind, I'm going to request Felix to take a picture of
no.
you and me, if you don't mind.
No
Thank
problem.
You. Felix, will you do the honor, please?
Of course. No problem.
Thank
no
you so much. So when is the testing, right? After
Tuesday,
this?
Wednesday.
Oh,
yep.
Wow. We have just made our deal to be friends. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Pleasure. I see you in the weekend anyway.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Mystery Guest. And Nas, let's wrap it up.
Yes, sir. Well, what can I say? You haven't given us any insight into the world of Le NASCAR.
Ah, speaking of Le NASCAR, did you watch the Daytona road race this weekend?
No, sir, I did not.
I'm telling you, this is the good NASCAR, and NASCAR is bragging how they have more road races on the schedule, so it's going to be exciting. We've got Chase Elliott all over the place, and the fight on the infield at Daytona, and we're going to do more road races. This season, we're also going to COTA, Circuit of the Americas. I'm telling you, NASCAR is the new one to watch.
No, they're doing like 6 road races, which I think is fantastic, and I love road racing, so I'll be watching more of that show. But, you know, I'm, you know, with all this thing going on, I really need some racing fix. There is a big karting facility about an hour or so from here, Ocala, which is like the real center of Florida karting scene. I need to find out when they are doing some major events, go there. A lot of places I can get to within an hour or two of flight. And that's one good thing being on the eastern seaboard. So my game plan right now, Mr. Rogers, you know, at least hoping to do the IndyCar race in Sweet Home, Alabama, and then the IndyCar race, which is a week later here in St. Petersburg, which is only 20 minutes from where I am. And I am also thinking of doing one of these. Because, you know, I'm working, so I just cannot take off. But I'm thinking of either doing the Indy 500 or, you know, before the Indy 500, same month in May, they do these 2 road races there at the Indy road circuit. I may do one of those. And again, everything depends on that COVID does not go more out of control than it is already. I would like to do that. And if the situation does not improve and I cannot make a run to Europa, then maybe I'll make a run to Laguna Seca for the IndyCar race. We'll see.
Excellent, Nasser. Just quickly, have you been to Ocala, Florida?
I have stopped there for breakfast on my way to D.C. It's not too far from here. It's about an hour and a half, I think. You have any recommendation there in terms of motorsports?
Well, a friend of mine who flies for Qantas lives there.
In Ocala?
In Ocala, correct.
And he's staying alive well?
And his house is really easy to spot because there's a 707 parked out front.
Yeah, big old jetliner, huh? I know who you're talking about. That's in Ocala?
In Ocala, Florida, correct. Exciting, huh?
And I'm sure you're on first-name basis with them.
No, so I'll get you invited over there, and you guys can have a chit-chat about Tom Cruise and all the boys. So anyway, on that note, Nasser, let's watch for sandbagging in March when we go to Bahrain, and let's watch Fernando top the timesheets. I want to thank everybody who listens. I'll see you guys at the vegetarian hot dog stand this weekend.
No, let's do a falafel stand for the Bahrain Grand Prix when it rolls in.
Consider it done.
Thank you.